And welcome to the Sportscast, May 24th, 2019. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all our channels, YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, and iTunes. And if you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. And visit us on thesportscast.net for all our latest sports news. A massive turn of events. The Toronto Raptors defeated the Milwaukee Bucks last night, 105-99. Toronto's leading the series 3-2. A week ago, people were saying Milwaukee. Has the tables turned? To join us to talk to us a little bit about this is Jeff Farr. Welcome back to the Sportscast.
Thanks a lot, Santi. I appreciate it, man.
No problem, man. It's been a while since football season, but the NBA is still going. Do you think Toronto might win this on Saturday?
Well, I'll tell you what. If they keep playing the team defense like they do, I think they will. When I watch the games, the Bucks, when they're at their best, really move the ball, they share the ball well, and they get quality shots. And the Raptors really have managed to keep up with the ball movement. And that's not an easy thing to do because, you know, when the Bucks are playing well, they really do get quality shots. And the other thing is Giannis has really – He hasn't been able to take over, and that's not really to discredit him, but Kawhi does a nice job on him, and then they also give Kawhi help. So, really, they've mucked up the paint, and they haven't let him, you know, wreck their game from the inside. And I think when we look back on this, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, because obviously I'm not saying the series is guaranteed to be over, but I think this will be one of those moments where we look back and say that this will probably be what the turning point where Giannis starts to develop more of a jump shot and do those other things that will round out his game.
Yeah, Kawhi Leonard had 35 points last night. Pascal Siakam had 14. Kyle Lowry had 17. Fran VanVleet had 21 points. For the Bucks last night, Giannis only had 24. Brooke Lopez had 16. Eric Bledsoe had 20. Malcolm Brogdon had 18. George Hill had 12. Do you think Toronto has found the recipe to stop Giannis?
They've at least found the recipe to slow him down. I mean, you're never going to – when you have a great player like Giannis, you're never going to, you know, shut him out or, you know, completely stop him. But what they've done a good job of doing is whatever buckets he scores, he really has to work for them. And they're also not just going to let him have a dunk contest in the middle of the game. They're going to make him make some tougher shots, and they always have bodies around them. You know, when you watch these games, even when the Bucks try to get out on the fast break, the Raptors have done a great job of getting back and contesting. That adds up over the course of a game, because all you need is to have a couple easy buckets to start feeling good about yourself, just to see the ball go through the hoop. And the Raptors are making the Bucks work for everything, and that includes Giannis. So, you know, when I watch the game, I think the Raptors they're just playing better defensively than what the Bucks are. And I don't think the Bucks are necessarily playing bad, but they're being outplayed by the Raptors right now. And Kawhi has probably been the best player on the court for the last two series. You know, he was the best player on the court against Philly, too. He played unbelievable. And I think Giannis gets more of the headlines, but I think Kawhi is the best player on the court on either team.
Yeah, which Kawhi, he's not playing 100% healthy, but he's definitely showing his inroads. I think when he was with the Spurs, I wasn't really sure if he was, you know, good. I mean, people were saying, yes, he's a good player. But I think coming onto the Toronto Raptors, he's really shown his potential.
I'm not sure what happened at the end of his time at San Antonio. That was a really weird circumstance. But the move to Toronto has definitely rejuvenated him. And if nothing else, he went into Toronto knowing that he was going to be the man from day one. He's lived up to all of that. I mean, he's their best player, and he's been phenomenal, and he's been their go-to guy on offense, and he's still a great defender. You know, I really can't think that you can ask him to do anything more than he's done so far.
Something that we definitely got to take a look at game six. I mean, there is a potential that, you know, Milwaukee could tie it up, but I really do see Toronto maybe closing it out. But we'll see what happens. This series has been very tight so far, but, you know, Toronto winning Milwaukee was a huge uplift, and win is on their sails. In the West, Golden State swept the Portland Trail Blazers, and it was close the last three games, but Golden State was able to pull it out. How did you see that series?
I thought Golden State. So I don't know that I can say, "Oh, the Warriors are better without Durant," because I think that's a bit of an exaggeration. You know, you hear that thrown around when a team plays well without a star. But what I will say for Golden State is their offense is much more free-flowing without Durant, and it reminds you of the Warriors teams from 4 and 5 years ago when they first came onto the scene and became popular. They moved the ball, and Draymond, so, you know, Klay and Curry will get the headlines because they're the scorers, but Draymond Green has done such a great job with the ball in his hands. And it seems like it rejuvenates him on the defensive end, too. You know, he makes a couple plays. He, you know, gets a dunk here and there, gets a put back, makes a nice pass. And then all of a sudden you start getting the Draymond of old on defense, too. So he's really stepped up in the absence of Durant. And all three of those guys, Curry, Klay, and Green, they all seem to have been, I don't want to say rejuvenated, because that makes it sound like, you know, they were waiting for Durant to get hurt. But I do think they all stepped up, and they've all played better. And I do think when Durant's not in there slowing down the offense with the isolation, I do think that you see a more just free-flowing, better ball movement, and keeping more guys involved than what they had when Durant was playing.
Yeah, that's something that's been a huge debate. Obviously, we're seeing the vintage Warriors – from 2015, like the original core coming into play. And I mean, obviously Durant is always a plus, you know, definitely a good insurance policy to, you know, give him the ball if they're in trouble or something. But this is quite interesting to see this team. You know, they beat the Rockets 4-2. They swept the Blazers. So, you know, depending on who they face in the East, because they say if it's going to be Milwaukee, they'll need KD, but if it's just Toronto, they may not.
I mean, that's a hard thing to say because it feels as though we've been underselling Toronto from the first series because of their past. In the past, Toronto has always fallen apart in the playoffs. And now, granted, the way they beat the Sixers to get a 5-bounce last-second jump shot in Game 7 is not exactly the way that the law of averages says you'll win a lot of games, but they did win, and now they're playing well versus the Bucks. So I wouldn't overlook the Raptors, you know, and defensively they've been playing well. And, you know, if you're going to play Golden State and you just try to go bucket for bucket with them and just try to outscore them, I don't see that being successful because Golden State will go on one of their 20-2 runs late in the third quarter. And before you know it, your boat is sinking. I think if you're going to beat the Warriors, you're going to have to be physical with them and not give them a lot of easy looks. The recipe to at least have a chance against the Warriors might be the same recipe to beat the Bucks. Now, the only thing I'll say is the Raptors aren't scared of Giannis hitting the outside shot. And when you play the Warriors, if you just play under the screens and let Curry outside or Klay outside, I mean, even Draymond's not a great 3-point shooter, but he'll at least shoot enough of them and make enough of them to keep you honest. You don't have that. You can't do that versus the Warriors. So I'm not sure what the Raptors would do defensively to match up with them.
Yeah, it's going to be quite interesting what happens. I have not heard any type of update on Kevin Durant on his injury, but I know the calf is a really serious injury. I know it's one step below of an Achilles tendon. But, you know, so far what it's looking is going to be Toronto. It should be a quite challenging series. Obviously, you know, Kawhi never had a good matchup against Golden State ever, or a good opportunity to take them on before in the playoffs. But if, you know, if things fall into place, if Toronto faces them, it's a great opportunity for Kawhi. The Kansas City Chiefs, obviously, the NFL draft happened like over a month ago, and they had a few picks. What were your thoughts overall?
My favorite picks for them were Thornhill and Saunders. I thought both those guys will be instant contributors, especially Thornhill. I mean, I think he'll end up being the starting free safety and play well from day one. Saunders will rotate in, give them a little extra pass rush. So I think those were probably my two favorite picks. And then Hartman, their first pick, the wide receiver out of Georgia, I mean, he's a burner. So the Chiefs are always going to surround Mahomes with burners because nobody throws vertically as well as Mahomes. Nobody has the big play ability as much as Mahomes. So they're always going to surround them with guys like that. And so I understand the reason for that pick. I'm not quite as sold on him coming in and contributing immediately as other people are. And then when you look at the later round picks, those are always, you know, a coin flip as to whether they hang on or not. But, with Thompson, I think he has a chance to get some snaps and be a solid running back. But again, those late round picks, I think, tend to get overhyped before they play an NFL down. You know, so let's see what happens once they get on the field a bit.
Yeah, Chiefs, for their first pick was number 56, Mecole Hardman from Georgia, wide receiver. And then number 63, John Thornhill, safety out of Virginia. Number 84, Kalen Sanders, defensive tackle from Western Illinois. Pick 201, Rashad Fenton, cornerback. 214, Darwin Thompson, running back. And 216, Nick Allegretti, guard. So, you know, a couple picks. We'll see what happens. Obviously, you know, a couple players left Kansas City, so maybe, you know, trying to fill up the holes. But, you know, Kansas City is still like a AFC championship contender.
Absolutely they are. And as long as they have Mahomes, they're at least going to be in the conversation. When you look at the AFC playoffs last year, if you redid those right now, I think it's pretty similar to the way it was. New England is still New England, and they're going to be as long as Belichick's there. But I still think Kansas City is far and away better than the Raiders and Broncos. And the Chargers, you know, the Chargers have a great roster. And as long as Phillip Rivers continues to play okay, play well, they're going to be right there too. But the reality is, with the Chiefs having Mahomes and Andy Reid, they just have such an advantage over the other teams in their division in terms of the coaching and quarterback combination. With the Broncos are going to try to win with defense again, which is fine because they have a ton of talent on defense. But I'm not sold on Flacco. Drew Lock, you know, could end up being a good quarterback, but he's not going to come in year one and win the AFC West. And then the Raiders, it's hard to say with the Raiders. I think they've improved their roster, but they've also increased the amount of drama that's going to be around them. So that's always hard to tell how that works out.
You think
so? Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I still think the Chiefs should be favorites to win the AFC West, but then once you get into the playoffs, there's always going to be surprises.
Yeah, the AFC West looks like, you know, most likely Kansas City. Back to the Broncos, you think Flacco's days are numbered?
Man, I mean, Flacco's been trending downward for a while.
Yeah.
I think he's an upgrade over Case Keenum, but I don't know by how much. He's, you know, Flacco's just another guy that's on the downward side of his career. Peaked at the right time, had some really nice playoff runs, played great in the playoffs a couple different times, and then especially, you know, the year they won the Super Bowl. But if Denver's in a weird spot, because Denver feels like they're one of those teams that maybe it's time to tank and really get your quarterback, and they refuse to do it. So they feel as a team that's stuck between 6-10 and 10-6. And until they really get their guy, they're going to be there. Now, like I said, Drew Lock could develop into a starting caliber QB, but he's certainly not the level of talent that you feel certain going into your season that, yes, we definitely have our guy a year from now. So, we'll, to me, it is all about how Drew Lock pans out. Because if Drew Lock doesn't turn into a starting level quarterback, then the Broncos are back to square one again.
Cornerback Adam Pacman-Jones has called it a career. Jones used social media Thursday to announce his retirement in an Instagram story, which now consists of Jones posting congratulatory messages on his career. He played recently with the Bengals and obviously with the Titans, Cowboys, and the Broncos in 12 seasons. What do you think about his career overall?
The sad reality of it is everyone will remember Pac-Man Jones as being a guy that was always in trouble. But in his prime, he was one of the absolute lockdown interior corners in the NFL. Great punt returner. He's really a phenomenal player. I mean, truly a phenomenal player. Unfortunately, it seemed like every offseason he was in trouble. So I think when people look back at his career, they might remember those things a little bit more than they remember the player.
The Buccaneers made it official on Thursday. Ntamukong Suh is coming to Tampa Bay. The team announced has agreed to terms with veteran defensive tackle. Suh signed with the Bucs just 3 days after Tampa Bay parted ways with longtime defensive tackle Gerald McCoy, both top three defensive tackles from the 2010 draft. Suh is seen as an immediate on-field replacement for McCoy, but at a cheaper rate. I mean, Suh played, you know, for the Rams, but now he's with the Bucs. What's going on there?
Well, I mean, I think Sue's in a position where he's going to be playing one-year deals for the rest of his career. And he's still a good player. He's not what we remember, the dominant game wrecker. To be blunt, he's after whoever will give him the best paycheck is going to get his services until he retires. That's just the reality of where his career is. I think the Rams gave him a really good opportunity to try to win a Super Bowl, and obviously they got close. They made it to the Super Bowl. But he's at the point of his career where his best football has already been played, and he's still a physical presence, but he's not dominant anymore. So from the Bucs' perspective, they save a few bucks, and from what I've seen, I think he's still better than McCoy, but maybe not by a wide margin.
Back to the quarterback issue with the Giants drafting Daniel Jones from Duke. You think Eli Manning's, you know, his days are numbered pretty much as well?
Eli Manning has really hit the wall. I mean, last year it was hard to watch him play. I mean, he really struggled. So with a guy like Jones, I'd assume their plan, you know, based on the way their management has talked in the offseason, their plan is to play Eli this year and then groom Jones to be the quarterback next year. But, you know, similar to what the Chiefs did with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes. Jones, here's the thing. I mean, a lot of us didn't like the Jones pick, but at the end of the day, a lot of us are not in NFL circles. So we're basing our opinion on a bunch of guys that are on TV because they either got fired in the NFL or never made it to the NFL. So the Giants traditionally are a quality franchise that's run really well. So I think they've used the right plan, and now we just have to find out if they pick the right player. We'll see if Jones is that guy.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. You know, obviously we got the Broncos and we got the Giants looking at potential, new quarterbacks coming in. Will they play this year? And obviously, you know, a lot of transition phases throughout the NFL. And also the Redskins, you know, getting Haskins, you know, will he start this year or will they start Colt McCoy, I believe, if you correct me wrong. But we'll see what happens. Le'Veon Bell not practicing for the Jets. I mean, is that a big deal or just, you know, just voluntary practices that no one, you know, has to come? Or
Normally I wouldn't really think it's a big deal, but you held out an entire year and then got the contract you wanted. If you're a guy if you're a guy getting paid and you're on a brand new team, you should be at everything. I mean, it's just you're trying to turn around the franchise that's really, really struggled lately. You should be there. I mean, that's especially when you're one of the highest paid players on your team. So I don't think it's a good look. Maybe it's overblown a little bit because they are voluntary. But new team, big payday, you should be there.
I agree. I think, you know, him missing out for a year, and, I mean, yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. He has to have a high performance next year, but it's one of those
Definitely.
Things, you know, missing out after 1 year in football is like, not saying it's eternity, but it is a long time in the football world. And what he did with the Steelers, I just couldn't believe what happened. And we'll see with Antonio Brown going to the Raiders.
Yeah, I think that's going to take about 4 games until he's throwing tantrums on the sideline. That's my guess.
I hope the Steelers, you know, cut the bad apples, and hopefully they're able to focus, you know, for a good playoff run at least.
They're going to miss Brown and Bell because you can't replace those types of players. But I do think you'll see a more consistent Steelers team. I don't know that their ceiling is as high without those guys, but I think on a week-to-week basis, you'll see a more well-rounded performance from them.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I do think the Browns will take over the AFC North, maybe starting next year.
They certainly have the roster to do it, but there's always more growing pains from going from bad to really good than what we usually recognize. And, it's not as simple as a video game where you just have enough good players to quickly turn it around.
Yeah, and plus,
but I think,
you know, plus adding like Odell Beckham Jr., you know, who knows what could happen. I mean, he could be good, but then he could be a nuisance in the locker room.
And Beckham is an absolute difference maker on the field. Yeah, it's. I want to see him and Baker, you know, connect and see how well they work together. But I do think the Browns' offense is set and ready to go from day one.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with the Cleveland Browns. Anything else before we head into game predictions?
I think we're good to go.
Okay, the only thing I got is tomorrow, the Milwaukee Bucks at the Toronto Raptors. Who takes this series? I mean, sorry, who takes this game?
Yeah, I think it's the game and the series. The Raptors are going to close it out.
It should be a good one, and I'll probably choose the Raptors. I mean, if Giannis has come back, and wow, that'd be a huge turnaround. If Milwaukee wins tomorrow, it's Milwaukee will win the series. Whoever wins tomorrow will win the series.
Yeah, I mean, but I wouldn't count the Raptors out in Game 7, but I do think it would give Milwaukee a tremendous boost if they could win a game in Toronto.
Yeah.
So I think tomorrow's a big game.
Big game. I'll be watching Saturday night, and then I guess the finals begin next week sometime. But yeah, the Warriors are definitely getting some good rest, get some healing done, and hopefully get the finals going. The ratings have been really low in the East for, like, the Eastern Conference Finals, but it's maybe a LeBron factor, probably.
That's probably a big part of it.
Random question. How do you like your donut? Ringed or stuffed?
Oh, Boston cream is my favorite, so that would be stuffed.
All right. And do you put pineapple on your pizza?
I'm not against it. I mean,
really?
Ham and pineapple, or even ham, pineapple, and jalapeno. I can do either one.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome. I think most people will say no, but, you know, there's still a handful of people that will eat it. I mean, I'll do it randomly. Like if I'm really hungry, you know, maybe have it, but it's not my first choice when it comes to toppings. But people like their ham and...
I'm the same way.
Yeah. Ham and pineapple, stuff, it's pizza. You know, it's all good. And, Jeff, how can people reach you online to talk to you a little bit about the Chiefs?
Best way to follow along is at JT Fulver on Twitter.
And you can follow us at the Sportscast 1 on Twitter, on the sportscast.net, all the podcast news you can get. And we'll be definitely following the NBA throughout the week, throughout the weekend, and the NBA Finals next week. Then summertime gets a little bit slow in the Sportscast. Soccer world is a little bit, it's not the World Cup, so it gets pretty dead, but we'll be following college football, NFL. There's always some news popping around in the world of sports. Well, Jeff, I appreciate you coming on to the Sportscast.
All right. Thanks a lot.